books are just like, they're a gateway. Books are absolutely a gateway. And especially if you're sitting in a bookstore, you can just go up and down the aisles and browse, and the conversation just starts.
Welcome to The Commons with Carla, the show dedicated to helping women who desire deeper connections and friendships. The Commons with Carla is a podcast for every woman who has missed out on deep connections because of life's distractions or hurts. Each week, I talk with a friend about their unique story, lessons learned, and their need for community. In our conversations, you will hear everyday stories from everyday people. We won't tell you what you should do. We will give you inspiration, encouragement, and ideas to apply in your own life. The real purpose is that you would be inspired and have better conversations, better connections, and better community. Hello, beauties. I'm Carla Osorno, and this is episode 33 of the podcast. Today's conversation is with Carrie Sweeney. Carrie loves to read, but doesn't just keep her book life to herself. Her online community is thriving because of her intentional efforts to have real conversations and because of her valuable content creation. Carrie's authenticity shines through on her Instagram stories and posts, making the world brighter for her community. Some of her online book friends have become real life friends too. Carrie masterfully navigates the balance of work, family, and hobbies, including reading. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Carrie Sweeney, I'm so excited to welcome you to the Commons.
Me too. Thanks, Carla.
Hey, thank you for saying yes. We don't know each other in real life. We just have like an online conversation that we have had periodically over the last few years. And when I knew that I wanted to talk about books and connection over books and community around books in October, I thought, who can I talk to? And your name was one of the first that came to my mind. And I'm so excited that you said yes, because you are a book celebrity and you have a full life. And you have so many places that I'm sure you could be right this moment, but you chose to be here and encourage women. And so I want to say thank you.
You know, I think talking about books is never a waste of time. That is always time well spent. So I'm happy to talk
books and reading. Well, we are going to talk a lot about books, but I would love to get to know you a little bit. And so help me and help our listeners to get to know you a little bit. Tell us about you.
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in Minnesota, spent my entire life there. I'm the oldest of four kids. And fun fact, I am from a family of three girls and a boy, and I have three girls and a boy, and they're about the same age range. So as tempting as it is to sometimes categorize my children like my siblings in terms of when they're acting a certain way, I do try to keep those two things separate. Although my brother will often commiserate with my son of, oh, buddy, I get it. Like, hang in there. It'll get better.
That's nice that they have that. Yeah. I see that a lot. I see generational repetition a lot. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't surprise me, but I love it.
But you can also learn from those things too, right? So like if there's a certain thing in your childhood that maybe didn't go according to plan, you can kind of gauge that out then with your own kids. So
sure.
I've been in Wisconsin for the last, more than half my life at this point. I came here for college and never went back. So really just a Midwesterner at heart. It's getting to be fall time here in Wisconsin, which I absolutely love. I like having the seasons. I actually don't mind snow and the winter cold. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's great. So went to Wisconsin for college. Was it a particular area of study, or did you have friends that went there, or what did you chase a boy? Like, what happened?
No. The year right after I graduated from high school, I actually was a Rotary youth exchange student in Japan. So I went and spent a year in Nagano, Japan, because I honestly didn't know what I wanted to do after high school. So I went and spent a year in Japan. And when it came to looking for a college, I wanted a school that wasn't too far from home. It was about 2 hours from home, which was close enough where I could go if I wanted, but not so close that parents could show up unannounced. and I wanted it to be a place that was about 10 to 15,000 students. I did not want to go to a very large university. And even after Japan, I still didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do. I don't even know if I still know what I want to do. But the university I went to had a large range of degree options. And so I just started taking kind of general courses, and I did not decide on my degree until sophomore year, which was organizational communication. So that's really a focus on change management, training, and development. And now I'm in sales. So,
okay, there you go.
There you have it.
Well, I think I love that you said that, because you give permission to everyone to not know what they want to do. Like, college is another extension of and time of exploration. And a lot of people do have a vision, and then their vision changes or stuff happens. So I love that you say that. And I'm sure your kids appreciate that too, that you don't have to pressure yourself to know. You can have multiple passions. You can just go to college, enjoy the experience, and it's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think for our generation, I mean, my parents had a job and they stayed at that organization forever. I mean, they started there, they retired from there. And I think that people don't do that anymore. They change jobs more often. They change fields more often.
Yeah.
And so that's a much more recognizable thing. And I always think now as an adult, what a crazy question it is to ask an 18-year-old, what do you want to do?
Oh, yes.
There's what don't I want to do is an easier question.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That's a really good one. I was thinking, you know, in terms of they're barely making their own meals and doing their own laundry, and how are they supposed to understand all of the opportunities that exist in the world? And yeah, I like to help point my daughter into, like, what do you want your days to look like? Because oftentimes I think when you pick a career, because you have a lack of understanding about what the job actually is. We were talking about this at dinner the other night, is if you say, let's say you want to be an attorney, what you imagine an attorney is looks like a courtroom drama, but the actual work of most attorneys is sitting in their chair, reading documents and contracts and tracking their time with billable hours. And for a lot of people, especially someone who would want to stand in front of a courtroom and litigate. Yep. Listen, I don't even know what I'm talking about, so I'm making it up. This is what I told you. I have this thing of I read about it and then I think I know more than I know. But anyway, I think the point that I wanted to make is that if you can think about how you want to spend your time, like, is it isolated? Is it with a bunch of people? Like, you can get closer to what you might want to do. And then there's probably a lot of options. So anyway.
Yeah.
What was Japan like?
It was very interesting. I'm very tall. I'm not very tall. I'm 5'9". So that alone was an interesting experience. Even though I had graduated from high school, I still went to an all-girls high school just so I could socialize and make friends. And they had a special order of my uniform because they didn't make one for someone as tall as me or who had size 10 shoes for the uniform. It was a really unique experience. I did not take the time to properly prepare. So I had no Japanese language experience before I left. So that was an adjustment. The first couple of weeks were a bit rough when I thought all my friends are going off to college and I'm in Japan where I don't know a soul. But it was also fantastic. And it was fantastic, I think, because I went in 94 to 95, so many, many years ago. But we did not have smartphones or cell phones or even like regular email access. Yeah. So I remember getting there. It was a 24-hour travel day. And I called my parents and my mom and dad said, okay, we'll talk to you in a month.
What?
Because phone calls were expensive. I wrote a ton of letters. I mean, like, I wrote letters every day, like handwritten letters, obviously. But we scheduled our monthly phone call. So it was a real opportunity for me to learn how to rely on myself, try new things, you know, just say yes and figure things out along the way. I eventually did learn Japanese. I don't know any now. So don't ask me to say anything.
Well, I did read a book about Japanese, so maybe I do know it too.
You might. So it was just a really amazing experience. I'm really glad I took the time to do that. I mean, obviously then that it didn't set me back, but I was a slightly older college freshman. But I would not have replaced that experience for anything. So I'm really glad that I went.
It all worked out.
It all worked out. It usually does.
Yes, it does. Well, okay. So books, Have you always been a reader, or did that start? When did that start? Tell me about your book story.
I was a reader as a kid. And then actually when I was in Japan, I read anything that was English. I didn't even care if it was like something I didn't want to read. Books were hard to come by at that time because no Kindle or eBooks either. And then it kind of got stagnant for a while, where I'd maybe read one or two books a year. And it wasn't until after the birth of my third child, I was laid off from work. I was home with her, and I really made a more of an intentional effort to get back into reading. And it kind of just snowballed from there in a very good way. I really do. It's interesting. I keep thinking there was a time we bought the house that we're currently living in about 5 years ago. And so there was a month or so where life just didn't allow me to read like I liked to. And I look back at that and I realize how much not reading impacted just my overall mental health well-being, that it really is an opportunity for me to just recharge and escape. And like, it's a treat for me. It's my version of self-care, and so like, I look back and I'm like, well, that's why you were so cranky.
Yeah.
That's why something felt off, because that kind of daily element of my life wasn't present because, you know, things bumped it out. So yeah. So I would say probably within the last 12 years is really when I started to read more voraciously than I had for the 10 years prior to that.
Yeah. I feel everything you're saying resonates so deeply with me. And I know for a lot of women that I talk to, that reading is that for us. Even if it's just a few minutes, it's a way to, like, there's something physical that happens in my body, and I can't describe it, and I haven't read a book on it, and I don't know what it is, but I know that it's true. And so even my family recognizes it. My daughter will recognize it, and she'll say, "Do you need to read? Like, do you need to check out because your anxiety or your frustration mm-hmm. level is just a little too high? Like, take some time for yourself." And so for a lot of people, that might be go for a run or do something like that, which I do enjoy, although as I age, it's harder. But a book is easy. It's easy to mm-hmm. just grab and get a couple minutes and just to come back to yourself and anchor yourself. And for me, it's anchoring myself in who I am and just relaxing. And then I can re-engage pretty quickly.
Yep. It's good medicine.
It is. That's a great way to say it. Mm-hmm. I'm totally stealing that.
Please do.
So how you do have a busy life. You mentioned working mm-hmm. from home. You have four children, a full life. How do you fit reading in?
I make it a priority or just adding it to my schedule. So I do typically get up early before the house wakes up, whether that's 10 or 15 minutes or an hour, just so that I can have that quiet time to read before I have to put on my mom colleague hat. I read in the school pickup line. I read when I'm waiting to pick kids up from theater practice, audiobooks when I'm making dinner. I listen to audiobooks in the grocery store.
Yeah.
And now my kids are a little bit older. My youngest is almost 9 and my oldest is almost 16. So that does help in terms of, yes, life is crazy and there's people going everywhere at every moment of the day, but they are a little bit more self-sufficient in the sense that I am not solely responsible for feeding them 3 meals a day.
Yes.
They know how to get a snack. They can help with laundry. They can do some of those things that maybe took up more of my time even 5 years ago. So I have a little bit more flexibility and freedom of when I can sneak reading in. Evenings are big. I mean, evenings, once dinner is done, the kids kind of escape if they're home and kind of do their own thing, which yeah. is fine. They're at that age where I'm not supposed to be their best friend, and that's okay. They'll come back. I know yeah. they will. but then I have some time to, like, I'll sit and I'll make a puzzle. And I'll listen to my audiobook, or if my husband's watching TV, I just sit next to him in the same room and read a book. But it all adds up. It's, for the most part, it's 10, 15 minutes here and there. But if you track that, it ends up being a couple hours a day, which sounds kind of significant. But like yeah. I said, they're usually in little smaller chunks
right.
That just kind of add up.
Right. And all of those things, I mean, I'm sure there's days where all of those things mm-hmm. don't happen. And so what I love about it, and I think what sometimes people don't understand, is that if you're listening to an audiobook while you're making dinner, but one of your children needs to talk to you, you can turn it off. Like, it's mm-hmm. okay to turn it off. And so I find that, yeah, even with my own family, they're sometimes like, well, I couldn't talk to you. Yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. Go over and press pause.
I usually have one earbud in.
Yes.
So I have one in and then like a free ear. And it's usually the earbud that I can pause quickly. And yes. they'll see the hand come up real quick if I'm listening to an audiobook. And then I'll hit pause. They can ask me the question and then move on.
Exactly.
They're getting trained.
Have you ever lost someone in your life and wished that you could hear their voice just one more time? Or have you ever looked at your child and thought that time is going too fast and wished that you could somehow capture these moments better than a posed photo? You can. After conducting hours of interviews, I was approached by a friend who asked me to interview her mother. Realizing that I could capture different responses from her mother with my conversational interview style than if she asked her mother questions and just recorded the responses, she asked me if I would interview her mother and record it on commercial sound equipment. Before I knew it, other friends wanted the same thing and suggested that I add this to my list of services. I am happy to help. Some of the most popular package ideas include 1, interviewing an older loved one using a mixture of my topics and yours. 2, talking with a teen or college age person, asking them questions focused on how they see the world and their generation. 3, a wedding gift where I talk with a couple in the months leading up to their marriage. What a wonderful thing to replay on their 10th and 20th anniversary. It's also great to share with their children in the years to come. These are just some of the ideas. The options for memory lane chats are limitless. Memories fade. We lose people in our lives. We go our whole lives without asking our loved ones to tell their precious stories. Let me help you capture these voices. Get more information or order today at memorylanechats.com. That's memorylanechats.com. And also you can be, I mean, you're aware, I'm aware as mm-hmm. a mom, if something's going on that needs my attention, I can absolutely turn it off. And that would be the priority. But no. If everyone's doing their own thing, which is mm-hmm. often the case, then why not enjoy that and make a task, which I don't enjoy cooking. I think you probably enjoy it more, but it's mundane to me. And so I just would rather be entertained while I'm doing it. It makes it easier to deal
with. That's laundry for me. Laundry is like the chore that I can't do without an audiobook. Like I can't, because it's never ending. It's always mounds and mounds of laundry.
Yes. Do you struggle, speaking of audio, because I sometimes do this, with choosing between a podcast or a book? Or do you always go book?
I usually go book because I can listen to podcasts during my workday.
Okay.
When I'm doing some work tasks, I don't want to say mundane work tasks, but like tasks that require a little bit less mental effort, whether I'm just kind of doing a housekeeping of my inbox, working on a spreadsheet, what have you, I can listen to a podcast.
Right.
But I can't listen to a book because that requires a little bit more mental commitment from me.
Gotcha.
So I tend to listen to podcasts during the workday, and then I save my audiobooks for tidying the house, laundry, you know, food prep, that type of thing.
You're so good to let us like dig into your day,
right?
Because it's really helpful that there will be listeners who will hear a snippet of this and it will be life-changing for them. Yep. And or affirmation that they're doing okay. So thank you for letting us dig deep. So I got to know you from Bookstagram. And mm-hmm. so I know that many other people do. So talk to me a little bit about how you originally started connecting with people, either in real life or online, about books.
I started that Bookstagram like on a whim, and I think it's probably been 5 years. So okay. it's taken a long time to build up that sense of community. But I think you just start meeting fellow readers from different outlets, whether it's from, I mean, you and I originally, I think, met through the Modern Mrs. Darcy Book Club.
Right.
So if I either meet people there, or you just kind of start to follow and connect with people that either have really similar reading styles to you or really different reading styles. And I think they both have a benefit. And you just kind of, it slowly builds those connections. And I do think the biggest thing that was significant for me was reaching out and starting conversations with people. and not simply just hitting double click to like it, taking a moment to say, I appreciate that caption that really resonated with me. Thanks for taking the time to do that. And that helps build that connection and make it be someone more than just a handle on the screen, right? I mean, because internet friends are real friends. They are. I mean, even if you've never met them in real life. Yeah. But I think just taking that time to do those reach outs and actually take a moment to comment and ask a question in a DM, and it just starts to build those, that sense of community. And then that kind of trickles out from there.
Yeah. I 100% agree with what you're saying, is that that intention to be in conversation and to dig a little bit deeper to, yeah, I love that. I mm-hmm. love that you do that. And you are really good at it. I see you do it with me. I can't speak to how you do it with other people, but actually I can, because I see comments and I see that dialogue going on, that exchange and all of that. So how do you create the content that you put out there? Because your posts are so reflective and deep. They're not, here's what I'm reading, which is how mine are, but they're really thoughtful and thought provoking and engaging, and they do create conversation. And so how does an idea just pop into your mind, or how are you doing that? Give us some tips.
It's interesting. So I do share every book that I read. Even if, well, first of all, I won't finish a book if I don't like it. That could be at the 100-page mark. That could be at the 90% mark.
Okay. Wow.
Although usually I will stop before 90%.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
If you don't like it, then you're not finishing it. So it would never show up anyway. So you don't have to say anything negative.
Right.
Okay.
My goal is twofold when I think about the time having Bookstagram is a time commitment, and that is a decision that I'm making to take time that I could be spending reading or organizing a closet or whatever, something
painting
probably more
your
fun
beautiful
than
wall.
Painting my new office / library. So I do think about, is this still worth my time? And the reason that I keep, I have two goals really in why I want to do it. I don't want it to feel like work. So once it starts feeling like I'm obligated to do it, for what, whether that's me putting that obligation on myself or like, you know, the greater Bookstagram community putting expectations, then I won't do it. Like, I don't want it to feel like work. And right now it still feels fun and I still enjoy interacting with fellow readers and doing that. So that's worth the time for me. And the second thing that I always want, and that's always in my mind, is being authentic. I hope that when people meet me in person, that I am the person that they thought I was based on what they see on my Instagram. So that is always in my head when I'm going into writing a review or thoughts and feelings about a book. Beyond that, I really want to make sure that I'm communicating why a book worked for me, and if it doesn't, why it still may work for someone else. And that's always a fine line that I walk. But I do think that there's a way to communicate that this book was good for me, it might be great for you, and there's a tactful way to do that. And so those are all the things that kind of go through my mind when I'm putting together content, if you will.
Well, you're nailing it. You're nailing it. I think that is coming through loud and clear. And this is our first time like face to face like this, where we're having a conversation, but the authenticity is coming through. And I think you're nailing it. And I do think that you are respectful, but you said content and you said it that way is like, you're not like, you know, some people are, that is their profession or their job as content creator. You're doing this for a love of books and readers. And so it's a hobby more than a vocation, right? And so, but you're doing a great job, but you're creating valuable, you're giving value to people who are truly interested in whether or not that book would be for them. Mm-hmm. And that is not the case with it. With certainly not with my posts. I mean, I'm really like, this is my opinion. And I don't know why. I'm going to revisit it after talking to you, because it's like, yeah, it's just noise if it's not authentic and heartfelt and valuable to the person who would be reading it. Yeah. So I think it's okay to use Bookstagram to track. Like some, I started it to track books, and I have other ways of tracking books, but I think that's okay. But I think what you're providing is so much more. It's like, yeah, that and more. So thank you.
Well, I love, I mean, honestly, I say this and I don't want people to think I'm just being, how do you say it when you're like, phoning it in? That's not what I'm trying to say. When people say, I found this book because of your review and I loved it.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy. Like that makes me feel good. It makes me feel like someone just bought me a brand new book, because like and there are people I probably will never meet, but that makes it worth the time. So like if the 30 minutes or whatever I spend to post and engage on Bookstagram, if that helps somebody find a book that they love, then that makes it worth it. That's validating to me. And so I always love when someone comes back and says, I found this book and you're right, it was XYZ. Thank you. So
That's beautiful. And
that's just me. I need that validation sometimes.
Well, and I do think that, like you said, I mean, there may have been times where you're like, oh, do I have time for this? Or I could be reading a book, because 30 minutes is a big deal to take out of reading time when you're an avid reader.
Yep.
But I think that what I hear you saying is that makes it, you're not talking into the void. There's that connection and that relationship and that validation. And I think that could make all the difference. And probably that's why tracking it isn't doing it for me in that way, because I'm not taking that extra step to make it a two-way conversation instead of just a one-way talking into the void. Mm-hmm. And that has an emptiness to it. If you're just posting periodically or you're just double clicking, it's not as fruitful and not as beautiful as what I hear you describing and what you're doing out there in the online world. So how many of the people that you communicate with online have you actually met in person, would you say? Is it a handful or is it one or two or?
Maybe 20.
Okay. Yeah. That's a pretty big number.
I know.
Because you have thousands of followers over, I don't even know. 7,000, 8,000?
Yeah, I haven't looked. 7 something, maybe.
Yeah.
I try not to look at the numbers because then I get wrapped up in stuff I really, honestly, don't care that much about.
But I just mean out of 20, just relatively speaking, 20 is quite a few.
Yeah, I still, pre-pandemic, would travel a lot for work. And every now and then I would just reach out, hey, I'm going to be in Dallas, who wants to meet up and go to a bookstore? Or I'm going to be in Austin, who wants to get together and go to a bookstore? So I've done that a couple different times.
No coffee, no dinner. I will meet you at the bookstore.
Just bookstore. So I've met some friends in Seattle. I've met some book friends in Austin a couple times, Dallas. I went to the bookshelf reading retreat, the very first one in Thomasville, Georgia. So there was obviously a group there that I met. And then I met my book besties through the inaugural Modern Mrs. Darcy book club retreat a couple years ago. And then we'd actually just had a reunion last weekend. Aww. A bunch of us got together again. So I try to, when my schedule allows for work trips, just I'll reach out and just say, I want to go see this bookstore. So
join me.
And by now I kind of know who lives in the area. So it's more of and I just don't put it in my stories. Like, hey, LA. Oh, I met a friend in LA too, by the way. And so, you know, what's interesting about that is that, I mean, there's a certain amount of trepidation that goes into that, right? So like you are meeting someone that you've obviously never met before, you know, and you're walking into the store and you're kind of doing that like forward, backward, but books are just like, they're a gateway. Books are absolutely a gateway. And especially if you're sitting in a bookstore, you can just go up and down the aisles and browse and the conversation just starts. Oh, have you read that? Oh, I have to. And I loved it. Or have you read that? No, I haven't heard about that. Tell me more. And it's just such an easy segue into building bigger, deeper conversations. And it's it's so easy to do. Like it's low impact, yeah. Right? Like it's not jumping in from the get-go. Tell me your hopes and dreams. it just naturally segues into having those deeper conversations.
So. It's really true. It's really true because it's so much easier to talk about the emotions or themes that the characters are dealing with, the problems that they're struggling with, or the things that they're celebrating. And then that naturally leads into what's going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true. Yep. So true.
Yep. Good conversation starters.
For sure. I think I'm an Enneagram 5. And so I am much more of an observer than an emotive, emotional person. But books flip that on, it flips it on its head. It's like all mm-hmm. of a sudden I'm not a 5 anymore. I'm some other number that's really in touch with myself, because it is, it's that shortcut to,
mm-hmm.
It's so much easier to talk about them. And then, like I said, naturally it leads into talking about what's going on with you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep. It's so good. So good. Just a quick break to say thank you for listening to the Commons with Carla podcast. I love getting messages from women who share that they resonate with the guests and feel like they are part of the conversation. That's one of the primary reasons this podcast exists. We want you to know that you are not alone. We all need encouragement, ideas, and perspective. If you feel like you got something inspirational or practical out of the conversation today, please share this episode with a friend who could use encouragement and connection. Simply share the link or take a screenshot and text it to a friend today. Thanks for listening. All right. So you are a matchmaker of sorts, a book matchmaker with the work that you're doing and just the content that you're creating on Bookstagram. Do you do that in real life too? Do you recommend books either to friends or to your kids, or do you just try and avoid that?
I'm that obnoxious person that will like be next to you at the bookstore or at the library book sale. And whether or not you ask for my opinion, if I see you're holding a book that I know, I'm like, oh, that's really good. You should buy that. So I had a friend that lovingly says, well, that's because you're a book pusher. I'm like, what? She's like, you're a book pusher. I actually had my husband design me a logo and a shirt that says book pusher on it.
Okay. We have to see a picture of that.
Yes. I'll have to send one to you. I do recommend books, and I try to rein it in for the most part. But I think what I think sometimes goes where people go wrong is they'll say, what's a good book to read? They'll start super, super general. And like, you really need to get a little bit deeper in the sense of, tell me the last book you read that you loved and why.
Yeah.
And then that can help you pick something either similar, if that's what you're looking for, or something completely different. So if you say, well, I loved this book because it had a strong sense of community, found family, and, you know, quirky characters. Okay. Then I can definitely point you in the right direction. But for you just to say, I love that book.
And there's nowhere to go.
Like there's nowhere to go. So I like that.
Well, and I think too, that even when you ask someone that and they say, I love it, you probably have to draw that out of them, because mm-hmm. for most of us, I mean, until I went on What Should I Read Next, I couldn't have described to you why I liked things. It's been being part of the Modern Mrs. Darcy book club community and just starting taking classes and just learning how mm-hmm. to describe it. And then really, Anne analyzed me, gave me book mm-hmm. therapy and told me what I liked. And she was spot on. I was like, oh, now I could tell you. Now I can look for it when I'm reading and identify that. But when you're just meeting someone in the store, they probably do just say, I loved it. And then as you draw it out, like the book that I think of is Where the Crawdads Sing.
Mm-hmm.
So many people loved it. But when you start to talk to them, they loved it for different reasons. And so I'm not a book matchmaker, but what you might recommend, you or Anne Bogle would mm-hmm. recommend is different, because you would dig into what they liked about it. And then you would know, but yep. You have a vast amount of books in your knowledge. Like, you know, what's out there. Tell me more about how you keep up with what's out there. Or is it just things that you've read or that you've heard about, or tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, it's interesting because you brought up Anne Bogle, and really I'd say for probably the last 5 years, I've been more intentional in terms of taking a pause after I finish a book and documenting why or why I didn't like a book. And that has served me so well for so many reasons, because it helps me, like I very rarely pick up a 2-star book anymore because I know myself more as a reader. Like I know myself, like I know what I'm going to want to read, and I know what's going to work for me. But that's come after like reflection, mm-hmm. and, you know, trying to figure it out. I try to have variety. I mean, I go through periods where all I read is romantic comedies, and then I go through periods where it's really heavy on historical fiction, and then I sneak back to throwing some nonfiction in. I like to read widely if I can, but it still goes in spurts. I don't read a lot of fantasy or sci-fi, but when I do, I'm pleasantly surprised. So maybe I should look a little bit more. I don't dismiss them so quickly. So yeah, I don't know. I build my to be read list with a mix of books from my shelves that I haven't read, and then books that are coming out soon, and just try to keep a variety for the most part. Yeah. Kind of within those barriers of, I know what I like. And it's interesting because when I was together last weekend with my book friends, we all read so very differently, but because we've gotten to know each other online for the most part, we were all able to lovingly say, "Oh, that's, you wouldn't like that," because they know enough about what I do read or like to read and say, "Oh, that book's not for you, but so-and-so would love it," and vice versa. So like we're able to kind of pick up a book and get the synopsis and know, well, this book is not for me, but I know exactly who would love it.
It's really helpful.
Yeah. And it just comes from the more you read, the more you know about yourself as a reader.
Yeah.
The more you know.
That's a quotable.
Yep.
That's funny. So I hear you saying you're reading lots of different genres. Does your mood dictate that, or how?
For the most part, my mood dictates that. Sometimes it's due date driven from the library, although I've gotten better about returning books unread to the library, which I used to not do. But what I found was if I was forcing it, I wasn't going to like it. And it wasn't the book's fault. It was because it was right book, wrong time. So that's typically what I do. I usually have a list of maybe 5 to 10 potential next books. And sometimes I look through the list and I'm like, I don't want to read any of these. And I'll go back to the drawing board and pick something different. Right now I am reading a library book that I actually want to read. So it's not due date driven.
You actually taught me that about how to manage your library holds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell the listeners a little bit about how you do that.
When I get up early in the morning, I go and I sit in my office and I go to my holds list, and my library will show you where you rank in, you know, I'm spot 2 of 30 holds. And if I see too many are going to come in at the same time, too many 14 day books, you know, those shorter loan times, I will freeze a couple because then I don't lose my spot in line when I unfreeze them. But then I'm not getting a stack of 10 books that I have to read in 2 weeks. Right. Cause then that feels like pressure, and I feel pressure. Like this is undue pressure to me that if I don't read it fast enough, I'm holding up somebody else. And then that makes me feel bad. And I feel like
I have to get
it back as soon as possible. But like, I don't know who's next on the list, and they're not sitting there thinking, Carrie, read faster. I mean, but I do.
No, they're not. But after this episode, maybe they will.
Right? They will. They'll be like, read faster.
No, I think that's smart. But they're also managing their holds. They're also doing that same dance, hopefully.
And that was my biggest, I mean, the pandemic is still horrible, but they took away that feature. Like they took away where I was in line.
Uh-oh.
For a while, and I didn't know how to function. It's just like, I'm getting, I was so excited to have books, period, from the library, but I'm like, but I have too many at the same time. You're messing with my system.
My system is broken. Yes, I know.
It's broken.
One more thing to put in the list.
Right.
Pandemic dilemmas.
Yep.
I see the beautiful bookshelf behind your head. And so, and you mentioned earlier that you're you're regularly balancing what you have on your shelf versus library versus audio. Yeah. That's a tricky balance. Sometimes I struggle with that because I will end up reading the library books because they're due. And that means that my unread shelf stays static or gets bigger as I buy new books. So what tricks or what things have you found to be successful with that balance?
Well, in my book journal, I have a page that's to be read, like books to be read. And those are typically current year releases for the most part. And then on the opposite page, I will have my unread shelf, where I will prioritize some books from my unread shelf. And then I also have a section that's rereads, books that I want to reread. So I typically reread about 10 books a year, so not quite one a month. Mm-hmm. But I really like rereading. And it's usually, if I read a book in print, I will reread it in audio. I always find something different that I still love, but a different element the second time around. So that kind of makes me a little bit more aware of the unread shelf. And then I also, because I'm a book nerd, I'll own it. I also have a spreadsheet where I do have a column based on a column that's unread shelf. So I like to kind of see, and I don't typically buy a ton of books. I think 85% of the books I read are library books, or they are advanced reader copies. And then the other 15% I purchase. And usually I'll read a library book and then I'll love it and I want to own it, and then I'll buy it.
Yes.
And I think part of that, I think, is because I'm a little bit thrifty. I was going to say cheap, but thrifty sounds more kind. I am thrifty and I read fast and I read a large quantity of books. And so from a budget perspective,
smart.
I can't buy every book, but I do buy the ones that I think I want to revisit, and I will pull them off my shelf and go to my book darted section and just read like 5 pages. And I love having them.
I love it.
Having book access darts. To them.
Mm-hmm. Book darts are amazing. You told me which book darts to buy. So I'll put a link in the show notes of those. And then you also made my first book sleeve.
Oh yeah.
And I bought a few for gifts too, but are you still doing that?
I can. I never like started an Etsy shop. It was more of a, I'll make you one. Just drop me a message and I'm happy to make them. But yeah, the little padded fabric. Good. Yeah. They protect your books.
They totally protect your books. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Yes. I love
My 14-year-old asked me for one. She's like, I need for my paperback. It's getting all beat up in my backpack.
Are your kids readers?
Not like me.
Yeah.
My oldest. And they're, fun fact, they're all named after my favorite literary characters.
They are.
So you would think, but no. My oldest is named Bennett. My daughter is Bennett, is named after Elizabeth Bennett. I have a scout who is just now reading To Kill a Mockingbird at school. She came up to me and she's like, "Do you have a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird?" I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I have 12. She's like, "Well, I need this special one." I'm like, "Well, then I'll buy another one." And then I have an Eleanor. After Eleanor, I'm going to forget her last name, in Contact, the Carl Sagan book, Contact, as well as Sense and Sensibility. And I have a Spencer after the Robert B. Parker Spencer books. He's a Boston PI series of books.
I love it. That is so beautiful. But, you're making me cry. That's so precious.
But I love it. But they go in spurts. I would say the 14 and almost 12-year-old are probably the ones that read the most. My 12-year-old loves manga, so that's fine. Reading.
I don't even know what that is.
It's like a Japanese comic almost.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like a specific subgenre of a graphic novel, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe explaining that wrong.
I totally agree with you though, whether you're taking in with your eyes or your ears, whether it's comics or whatever, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. Yeah. Reading is reading.
Yep. So I'm hoping that maybe, I mean, my 14-year-old read, we had like a mom kid book club for a while, and then just life got busy, and that's okay too. She has other things she'd rather do, but hopefully they'll all kind of come back to it. Maybe they'll be like me. They'll take a decade off and then find their groove.
That's exactly right. I always think the same thing is I love to read. And throughout my life, there have been definitely seasons where I've read more. Mm-hmm. But I do hope that. I hope that the seed has been planted, and whether mm-hmm. it takes decades or not to really blossom. I just think it's such a rich hobby to have, a rich experience to have. And really, I mean, for whether it's for escape or for learning or whatever your reading personality is, there's just so much benefit for most people. And not everyone will read as much as you do or like I do, but that's okay. But it's I think anytime you step into a book, there's joy.
Yep. I mean, I always say, if you read one book a year, awesome. If you read 100 books a year, cool. And then anywhere in between. I mean, it's just, read something. Just read something.
Now you also, I've been in a buddy read with you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you do that periodically where you'll read with a group and just tackle. So what prompts that? Is that somebody else's suggestion?
No, it's funny you say that, because what happens is I buy a book like Lonesome Dove or Jane Eyre or what have you, and it sits on my shelf and it stares at me and it taunts me. And it's like, you bought this because you wanted to read it. And about once a year, I pick one book that I'll host a buddy read, because it forces me to read it and I'm held accountable because there's other people reading it, yep. reading it with me. So whether I'm hosting one, so that's how that happened. Like, I bought Lonesome Dove and I knew I would never tackle it.
Yeah.
And same thing with Jane Eyre. I mean, it's been on my to be read list for 2 decades. So
that's
like
the one I read with you. And yeah. I loved it. I absolutely mm-hmm. loved it. And I was so grateful I read it, because there's so many references in other works that mm-hmm. I didn't understand, or I kind of understood, but I didn't really have the full picture. And so it was so helpful to have that accountability and to be able to talk about it. And whether I was ahead or behind, it didn't matter. It was really helpful.
Yep. And I think I did Middlemarch this year, because once again, I'd never read Middlemarch. And I typically do them with not heftier books, but books that it's going to be inherently more conversation about.
Yes.
Whether it's a classic. I just finished A Little Life. That's a big, dense, heavy book that's just ripe for conversation. And so I did appreciate reading that with a group.
Yeah. I missed that one. Yeah. It's on my shelf too and staring at me. So,
right.
Yeah.
They taunt me. Sometimes they have like, I see you, I'll get to you eventually.
I know.
Leave me alone.
Well, I think, I mean, you saying that is like, I missed out on being a participant in that one, but there's nothing stopping me from hosting it with mm-hmm. a group of people, because mm-hmm. just like you have those books staring at you and I have them staring at me, mm-hmm. we can always grab one or two people or even yep. a handful of people and make that happen. So thank you for that encouragement. And thank you for hosting it. You do a great job of putting those together. So do you have friends that don't read?
Oh, absolutely.
I know. I just wanted you to say that in case they thought that all of our friends are readers. No. So how do you engage in conversation with them? Like, how does that look different? I guess I should say.
Well, because there's always, I mean, your friends have different commonalities. So some of my friends I met through other hobbies. I used to do a ton of scrapbooking. So I have friends that I met through scrapbooking that have just segued into just friends that we don't scrapbook anymore, but we're still friends. So then you talk about work and life and kids and home and sports mm-hmm. and whatever. There's always just different things that you talk about. And the conversations are different, right? So, I mean, even with my book friends, it may start out as talking about books, but then it segues into, you know, relationships and how they're doing professionally, personally, et cetera. So, yeah, it just depends.
Absolutely. And I think even my friends that aren't big readers, it always ends up, we end up talking about a book too, because they'll say mm-hmm. they know I love to read and they care about me. So they'll ask, what are you reading? And then we'll talk about it for a few minutes. So yep. I agree with you that whether it starts with books and ends with relationships, or starts with relationships and segues to books, they're the yep. same. They're the same.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yep. Oh, I have enjoyed our time so much. I don't want it to end, but we are getting to the end. And I want to ask you, Carrie, what are you looking forward to?
It's funny. Did I tell you? I don't think I told you. My mom started asking me that. during the pandemic.
Oh my goodness. That's a question I love. And she asked me that.
Yeah. So just out of the blue, she started asking me, what do you have to look forward to next, or something to that effect? I'm like, oh, I'm going to see my best friend, Karen. We're going to meet halfway for coffee. And then that would happen. And then she'd say, okay, well, so you saw Karen. What's the next thing you're going to look forward to? And it's funny you say that, because I was just talking about that in Nashville at this reunion with, I said, so this has been the thing that I was looking forward to.
Aww.
And now what's the next thing I'm looking forward to? I'm actually looking forward to winter. I know that sounds horrible. I'm looking forward to colder days where I can make a fire in my fireplace and go to my winter reading spot, which is different from my summer fall reading spot. I'm looking forward to quieter, cozier, hopefully less hectic days of winter. That's what I'm actually looking forward to.
I love it. And one final question for you is, what advice would you give to a woman who's listening who wants to start reading? Where would you have her start?
If they have access to a local bookstore, I would go to the bookstore or the library, either one. And I would have the courage to go up to either the librarian or the sales bookseller and start a conversation. Perfect. Just say, I'm getting back into reading. I don't know where to start. These are some books that I've liked in the past. Help point me in the right direction, because they're talented. That's what they do all day, every day. They will put the right book in their hands. And if they don't want to talk to a bookseller or a librarian, they can ask me and I'll tell them what to read. I'm never shy about telling somebody what to read.
Where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yes, I am at What Carrie Reads. That's K-A-R-I.
Yes. Yes. Carrie, yeah. You are so beautiful and so delightful. Oh, I have enjoyed watching you from afar, and to get to have this conversation with you today about books and about just your life and how you integrate reading and how you have created community around it. And just, you are authentic and you are stunning person. And I just, I know that people will be encouraged not only for book reading and for all things books, but also for how to create community online and just to really press in and be themselves and really make it valuable by making it a two-way conversation. So I just appreciate you so much. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
It was super fun. Thanks to Carrie for sharing her story today. In our conversation, Carrie gives us a peek into her daily life, especially how she makes time and prioritizes reading and reading community. She offers us many tips and tricks by just telling us what works for her. As a busy wife, mom, and colleague, Carrie is realistic about needing time for herself too. Reading gives her that and is a must for her mental state. Maybe for you, taking time for yourself is not about books or reading. That's okay. Whatever it is, the invitation to take care of yourself is the same, and Carrie's ideas may just work. I hope hearing Carrie's story encourages you. Beauties, I hope you enjoyed listening to the show today. Subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss next week's show. If you like the show, please leave a review and share the show with someone. For show notes and links to what we talked about, visit thecommonswithcarla.com. Our newsletter subscribers get all the news and happenings from The Commons with Carla. If you're not on the list, go to thecommonswithcarla.com to sign up for our free weekly podcast email. You can also follow the show on Instagram at The Commons with Carla. Feel free to participate in the conversation and to tag us to share your wins. Thanks to Bethany at Adkins Media for her work on the show, and to Donald Zimmerman for our theme music. Beauties, that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. In the words of Thomas Merton, love is our true destiny. We do not find the meaning of life by ourselves alone. We find it with another. Have a great week, everyone.